Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. On this special Fun Day program, your hosts are still Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson. Always good to be with you, Paul.
Well, same here, Susan. Thanks, and it's always good to be welcoming our listeners today, too. I'm sure they're wondering what's so special about today.
Later in the program, we'll be hearing from some of the nearby towns who appreciate what we're doing for them and why those listening should consider becoming members as well at $55 or more. But we also have two guest interviews that showcase the kind of Iowa programming we are proudest of. The first is Art Cullen, who just won the Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing in the Storm Lake Times. Greta Anderson, our ace political reporter, is here to talk with him about how the issues of this series of editorials affect all of us in Iowa. For the latter half of the show, we turn to another favorite subject of Local Talk when John Hoffman comes into the studio to tell us what's it's like to do a one-man show about Teddy Roosevelt in Bully at the Boone Community Theater opening this weekend.
Well, I imagine a lot of our listeners have read about this Pulitzer Prize, but Greta has been able to solicit an in-depth interview. Hi, Greta.
Hi.
And since these editorials were written in 2016, Art will be able to add his insights to more current issues, such as the attacks on the existence of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, which is right now. Also, I'd like to throw in a local note. And a personal note, I imagine some of our listeners will remember the brief period about 30 years ago when Art Cullen was editor of the Ames Tribune. So, congratulations, Art.
Well, thank you.
Good to have you back in Ames, even if only over the air.
Well, I have many, many fond memories of Ames and Johnny Orr and Jeff Grayer. That's how I mark time is in Iowa State basketball.
Well,
people ask me, when were you in Ames? And I tell them, just after Barry Stevens and during the Jeff Grayer years.
Okay.
Well, Susan Franzen here, our co-host, talks about the Ames Tribune in terms of when she was writing editorials for your paper.
Those weren't editorials. Those were unsolicited guest columns that he let me put in the paper. But
okay.
I remember I got to see you once a month when I brought my paper in. And I was very impressed because you looked like a real 19th century editor. And I think you've got that fighting spirit, too.
And you looked like a Victorian lovely.
Thank you, still do.
Well, that was actually the first thing I want to talk about. First, I want to encourage all of our listeners to actually go to the Storm Lake Times webpage and look up the page where you've printed all the Pulitzer Prize winning editorials. It's just really wonderful writing. I mean, reminiscent really of Mark Twain and the acerbic wit that really makes politics fun. So I'm going to share actually a little bit.
That's
from
the ultimate compliment, by the way, Mark Twain.
Okay, well, you
That's
have a little bit.
Verified atmosphere there.
Well, so the very first one you hear includes these sentences. Anyone can see how filthy Storm Lake is, how the Des Moines River near Humboldt is a mud flow, how shallow lakes in northwest Iowa have eroded into duck marshes. Anyone with eyes and a nose knows in his gut that Iowa has the dirtiest surface water in America. It is choking the waterworks and the Gulf of Mexico. It is causing oxygen deprivation in northwest Iowa glacial lakes and so on. Art, you know, there's the common wisdom is that Iowa nice is what sells here, and it's very refreshing to have a different kind of standard brought forth.
Well, thank you. There's a great tradition also in Iowa called Iowa Stubborn, and I think that's on display as well. And there's also a great tradition in Iowa for editorial writing. And raising hell and standing up against closed government and standing up for open government.
Okay, and that is really what the series of editorials is focused on, is finding out, you wanted to know how these three counties, one of them the county you're situated in, Buena Vista County, then Sac and Calhoun, how they were financing their legal defense against the Waterworks, Des Moines Waterworks lawsuit. And when you approached your supervisors, they did not want to reveal that information. Can you take the story from there and tell us how you went about finding who was financing the lawsuit, the defense?
Well, yeah, the supervisors were being circumspect about it, and they said they were going to ask their friends, including the Iowa Drainage District Association, and and that was predictable and understandable. And, of course, Farm Bureau, and that's predictable and understandable, and the corn growers and so on. But then the Agribusiness Association of Iowa gets involved somehow and creates this donor fund, the contributors to which were secret. And so we asked the counties to reveal who those donors were. And both the counties and the Agribusiness Association of Iowa refused to release the donor list. And then we had to do a lot of jawboning to get the attorney billings to find out just how much this defense was costing. And we asked the Waterworks, and they were budgeting about $1.5 million, and it was all coming from their customers, essentially, through fees. And so we asked, how are we paying for our side of this? And we couldn't find out, and so we engaged with the Iowa Freedom of Information Council out of Des Moines, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan group of journalists and educators, artists, lawyers, librarians, et cetera. It operates on a shoestring budget, and I'd urge you to contribute to the Iowa Freedom of Information Council. But anyway, we joined with them and engaged in a letter writing and editorial writing campaign to get the we got a hold of the attorney billing records, and through other means we learned that AAI was meeting with executives from Monsanto and Koch Fertilizer to create this fund, and so we reported all that and continued to write editorials. A, demanding transparency in county government. B, arguing for a settlement because it would save everybody a lot of money. And C, to look at the Iowa landscape in more sustainable, using more sustainable practices.
That's right. One of the main points that you've made throughout these editorials is that it really doesn't cost anything to change practices in a way that would benefit the state waters and, of course, the Gulf of Mexico, where it ultimately drains.
Yeah, well, one of the things that the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University has been advocating for years and years are these very practices. Iowa State research, not by the Leopold Center, but other Iowa State research in the agronomy department, shows that if you plant 10% of a field to native grasses, you'll reduce 90% of the free-floating nitrogen and phosphorus that otherwise would go to drainage tiles and become nitrate and cyanotoxins in the Raccoon River. Now, of course, that's you're losing 10% of your corn or soybean acreage, but on the other hand, you're saving nutrients. Could be using native grass for grazing, and so on and so forth. So you can create a sustainable cycle that makes agriculture actually more profitable and leaves a lighter footprint on the landscape.
You repeatedly refer to the $6 billion or $10 billion or $15 billion that has been cited that it might take to institute such practices, and then refute that claim that it will cost the state billions of dollars to clean up the waters.
Yeah, there have been federal cost share programs available since the Dust Bowl for landowners to participate in conservation practices, and they just don't, around here, this is, the buckle of the Corn Belt, they just don't do it. And a lot of farmers do practice. You know, who farm near the Raccoon River are good stewards. They do try to do the right thing. In fact, Seth Smith from Nemaha was just named got the top environmental award from the Iowa Cattlemen for using many of the same practices that the Leopold Center prescribes. Now, we just eliminated funding for the Leopold Center, named after Aldo Leopold. And so we're going backwards. We're not going forward.
Well, let's talk about that, the funding for the Leopold Center. What do you make of this?
Well, it's what happens when one party takes control of government, that, you know, you go off the tracks. And that's what's happened this year at the Iowa legislature. One party is firmly in control, and we had a pretty nice gridlock scheme going for the last 20 or 30 years with Mike Gronstall controlling the Senate and the Republicans controlling everything else. And that was the Iowa way of doing things, slowly, methodically, plod along. And, but now they're just running roughshod over everything. And this is purely political. Eliminating the Leopold Center is a purely political statement because in terms of the state budget, the Leopold Center is pennies. It's nothing in terms of the state budget. It's completely a political statement, saying we intend no new practices. We aren't really serious about nutrient reduction. We're going to just do things the way we've been doing them. And the dismissal of the waterworks lawsuit, told Iowa agriculture, go ahead, intensify your production, rip out those grass filters. We're going to cut conservation funding in Washington. We're going to cut it in Iowa. So just go ahead let the Des Moines Waterworks clean up its mess.
It
is discouraging. It's frustrating, and I don't feel like we're getting anywhere.
Right. Well, intensified crop practices on the Iowa landscape haven't been working so well for farmers. It doesn't seem economically. I mean, last year we had a boom year in terms of production, but finances are falling short.
Right. Well, you see, everybody's tied into the ag supply chain. Either you participate in it or you don't. And you participate in it and operate like a serf to the supply chain, or you don't participate in it and you do something else. I don't know, you raise a few goats. I don't know. Here in Northwest Iowa, you basically have a choice. If you want to farm, you participate in the ag supply chain. And that's just the way it works.
Okay. Well, another dimension that you bring in is another part of the agricultural economy, the presence of immigrants and migrants to Iowa who are working in a very large processing plant in your town, Storm Lake. This was part of Branstad's quote-unquote proposal to solve the water quality crisis, to take some tax money away from the schools and school infrastructure to devote to water quality improvements.
Yeah, well, so one of the points is that we grow corn to feed the hogs to slaughter at Tyson. And Anglos don't want to cut loins anymore. We then bring in immigrants from around the world to cut those loins and pull those loins and get their foot on the first rung of the ladder of American success. They have kids. Those kids are going to go to Iowa State someday. But we need to, in the meantime, put them in a schoolhouse. They're coming out the windows here in Storm Lake. So then the governor wants to to take the sales tax and devote it to a guy in California who owns farmland in Iowa, pays no sales tax in Iowa, but Branstad wants to write him a check so he can put in a bioreactor that isn't going to do anything. Meantime, Storm Lake will have to raise property taxes on ag land, of all things, mainly on ag land, to build a new school. Does that make sense?
Well, Susan here has been covering the small towns, particularly Webster City is one that she's covered quite a bit, that also has a large immigrant population, and she might want to chime in.
Well, just in general, the high school population is not just in towns like Webster City with big immigrant populations, but every little town I look at, you know, Colo, Collins, Roland have significantly large underage populations, as high as 30%. And what is the anchor for those towns? It's those schools. So any cut in the school budget is devastating. And we recently had the superintendent of the Nevada Colonesco schools, which are two different districts, but they still have to. Never mind.
They share a
superintendent, and he was talking about the devastating cuts every single year up to now, and now with the prospect of the essentially vouchers, and the subsidies for homeschooling, it's just devastating. So it's all kinds of communities that are hurt by these policies.
What's happening in Northwest Iowa is rural schools are depopulating, consolidating, and closing. The only county in there are two counties in Northwest Iowa that have gained population since 1980. That's Dickinson and Buena Vista. Buena Vista is home to Storm Lake. And the only reason Dickinson County is growing is because of the Iowa Great Lakes. The only reason Storm Lake is growing is because of immigrants. And immigrants make our economy go, and we have a congressman who wants to ship them all out. He wants to ship out a state championship soccer team and ship them back to Mexico. Because they have cantaloupes, calves the size of cantaloupes. So this is the kind of thing we're dealing with here in Northwest Iowa. It's a slightly different dynamic than what's going on in the Ames-Des Moines metro area. But in rural Iowa, they're still turning off the lights in many rural communities, and it's a whole different dynamic.
Well, yes, but the Iowa Great Lakes are, I would imagine, a pretty significant tourist attraction. So if you pollute the water, nobody's going to want to come there.
Right. And the Iowa Great Lakes have been well protected by a local preservation group that developed sloughs and so on around the Iowa Great Lakes. Storm Lake is largely unprotected, so it's suffered from 100 years worth of siltation. When the surveyors found it in 1850, it was a clear blue water lake with a blue clay bottom surrounded by boulders. The boulders are all gone, the marshes and sloughs are all gone, and they're turned into cropland, and it all rushes right into Storm Lake. Storm Lake is 26 feet deep to the clay bottom, but before we started dredging the lake, which this newspaper campaigned for, it was 7 feet deep. There was 19 feet of mud on the bottom of the lake. We've been dredging it since the early 1990s. We're spending millions and millions of dollars to dredge this lake every year because of our poor stewardship of the landscape. Now, in Storm Lake, we've started to change things. Farmers are getting involved. They are trying to protect the Storm Lake watershed. But this is just one watershed in all of Iowa. And Storm Lake is fairly unique, and Emmitsburg also, in that local people have been contributing to the lake restoration efforts. Local farmers are contributing as well. And so we've been able to build a community spirit here that tries to protect the lake. But it's a huge waste of money to pour the soil into the lake and then pump it back out into a pit and let it sit there for a century where it can't be farmed.
We're talking with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, newspaper man Art Cullen, and about his editorials about water quality and the agribusiness landscape that surrounds us. Art, just one more question. You know, you talk about the community spirit that you've managed to build there in Storm Lake and in Buena Vista County, and that's just so inspiring to us because that's what we're trying to do here at KHOI, to build community
Great.
Through communication. And yet you're going against the grain as well with the kinds of editorials you write, the points that you make and that you persist in making. And how do you balance those two things, the, going against the grain and building community spirit? It's just, you must come across people who disagree with you, and how do you deal with
them? Well, sure, but that that's how you build community, stronger communities, is by me trying to understand a guy who is has his back up against the wall on $300 cash rent. I've got to understand him. And then once he understands me, then we can get somewhere. And that's the whole idea of community journalism, is to get into that kind of discussion through the editorial page. And that's what we try to do twice a week. And so we encourage you to visit our website, stormlake.com. And, you might find some interesting obituary from Storm Lake and people you know. I don't know. I was a small state, so visit the website if you're bored someday and check it out.
Absolutely. We'll be linking to your website on our website. But until that time, if anyone's listening live right now and wants to go there and check it out, go ahead and do so. I encourage you. You'll find some excellent writing and a few choice words. Let's put it that way.
Well, thanks.
Yes, and thanks for being on today, Art. Great to hear you again.
Likewise. Go Clowns.
Well, this is KHOI Community Radio, and reporter Greta Anderson has been speaking with Art Cullen, Pulitzer Prize-winning editor of the Storm Lake Times, published twice a week. We like to have our stories serve as inspiration and the spirit. And this is a shout-out to all those small-town papers in Iowa. Keep the spirit of your communities alive. It's rare to have a paper as courageous as the Storm Lake Times, but the Storm Lake Times is an inspiration about what's possible in local journalism.
It's also an inspiration to a small-town radio station. That's why we're proud to be able to bring you Art Cullen, who has given us in-depth commentaries on issues that our listeners care about. Probably at least as much as the members of the Pulitzer Committee care about them. We hope that some of our listeners are noting that this kind of conversation is hard to find on any media outlet in Iowa. If you like this, please consider becoming a member. Our goal is 25 new members in this membership drive. So you see, one member is really important. That may not sound like much, but that's the way we grow. So, tell your friends about what you're hearing. Remember, if you join now or renew now, your gift is doubled from the $15,000 matching grant that our most generous members have provided. If you join at the basic membership level of $55 per year, that will bring us $110 per year for our budget. Just call 515-231-9155 or contribute online at khoifm.org.
Or come to the station right here at 410 Douglas, like John Hoffman on his way to work. And you've come to 410 Douglas, and thanks for coming, John. I know that you're here to let us know about how you portray Teddy Roosevelt in the one-man show Bully that will open this Friday night at Boone Community Theater. And you'll be playing the character you'll be playing at 106 South Webster Street in Webster City, the community theater there in Webster City.
No, that's in Boone.
Or in Boone.
In
okay.
Boone, yes.
I got
Webster
the wrong
Street.
Town.
Webster Street
yes,
in
Webster
Boone.
Street. Yes.
It's hard enough to find.
It'll be in
Boone at 106 East South Webster Street in Boone, and that's the community theater.
Yes.
And so welcome to KHOI.
Thank you.
We're proud to feature most of the community theaters in this listening area, and that's one of the reasons that Paul got mixed up, because Webster City is another favorite.
Yes, they have a good theater up there.
Well, yes, and that's one of the things that we're proud to let people know about. Occasionally a production gets away from us, but we try to feature most of the productions, and not all towns do have community theaters. And I know that's been a struggle for Boone. You've been president of the Boone Community Theater, right?
Yes, I have. I was president for a couple of years, and that's been a year ago now. One of the things we do is we rotate our presidency around, because we're an all-volunteer organization, so that way that's not too much of a burden on anyone. The president seems to be the person in the hot seat.
But now, if he's good enough, why, he can do a one-man show, right?
Well, that's right. You know, speaking of president, yes, I will be playing President Teddy Roosevelt, the 26th president, and actually, you know, he didn't like to be called Teddy so much. He preferred TR, but he realized that that was the name that the press and the people put on him, and so he was going to go for it. As he says, as I say in the show, the only politician that doesn't need publicity is a dead politician.
Right. Well, now, how did you come to center on Teddy Roosevelt?
Well, here's what happened. You know, we have a director, one of our people in our director pool, Susan Herrick, just a brilliant, brilliant director. She saw this show in the late 70s and up at the Guthrie Theater. She just fell in love with the show. And so she's carried this in her heart ever since. And she was always looking for somebody that she could convince to do this, because it's a one-man show. As I tell people, I've only got two lines, Act 1 and Act 2. But, the downside is they're both more than an hour long. But it's terrific. So she showed me the script, and once I began to read it, I just fell in love with it. And I thought, oh, what a terrific opportunity and a great thing to stretch myself as an actor.
Have you done a lot of research on that, on Teddy Roosevelt, to augment your performance?
Yes, I have. You know, when I first started this, it was about a year ago that she first talked me into this, and Teddy Roosevelt was just another face on the mountain, you know, to me. And so I thought, as an actor, I love to do my research, and I love to look at the backstories, especially if you're portraying a real person. So, I read his autobiography, some of his other books, and other books are written about him, too, so.
And he's one of the first presidents where there's some film footage and
there
audio,
is.
Too.
There is audio and film footage, and I've used that. I've listened to that a lot. Most of the audio is just him giving speeches. And so there are a few speeches in the play here in Bully. And so I've used some of that to get the right cadence to do that, because he's an interesting fellow. His voice he's an Eastern boy, grew up in New York, and then went out west. And so there's a bit of each of those in his voice.
Well, that's really interesting. It must be a little tricky to be able to do that.
It is. And, you know, and in some scenes, some of the East comes out. In some scenes, some of the West comes out. But, it's been a terrific, it's been a lot of fun preparing for this role. Really excited to get it in front of an audience.
Well, politically, he's also very interesting because he's best known, I guess, and best loved for the national parks.
Yes, absolutely. And the Panama Canal and many things like that. He pushed through a lot of things. And
like the Spanish-American War and the American
yes.
Empire. So we have... And no matter what your politics are, you've got something to love about TR.
Absolutely.
And something to not like so well.
Yes, yes. And in those days, politics wasn't so much left and right, or at least the way he saw them. It was more in terms of right and wrong. And he, as a president, as anything, he wanted, when he saw something wrong, he wanted to make it right. He didn't care whether he allied with the left or the right politically. With Republicans or Democrats or whoever, as long as he could get done what he felt to get done. And I find that's a refreshing attitude in politics.
Yeah, the Roosevelt family, there was a real split. They had the Roosevelts of Oyster Bay, which mm-hmm. is Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Roosevelts of upstate New York, that's FDR and that gang.
Mm-hmm.
And the upstate New Yorkers are Democrats. He's a Republican.
Yes.
And I believe Teddy gave away Eleanor at the wedding.
Oh.
He ushered her down the aisle and gave her to FDR.
Wow.
So apparently everybody talked.
Well, actually, that's interesting because yeah. they had to delay. I heard a one-woman show by Eleanor, and she recalls having to delay the wedding until Teddy got there. I mean, absolutely, you know, the most important person had to be there. So they waited and waited, and when he got there, he gave away the bride, and then he went off to the reception, and all the guests went with him.
So, yeah, he's an unforgettable yes, character.
Certainly, very charismatic.
Now, is it true that Teddy, he was so warlike and so aggressive in mm-hmm. foreign policy, and such a war, well, a lot of people called him a warmonger. You
mm-hmm.
know? Now, did he lose his son in the First World War?
He did. He did.
His
youngest
Quentin?
His youngest son, Quentin, was yep. in the Air Force, and the Air Force was a brand new thing in those days. They had just, I mean, they were flying Wright Brothers style planes. And so they were just learning what airplanes could do in wartime. And so, yes, his son, and that was a terrific blow to him because, you know, but I think before that he had always felt that you know, war is glorious and it's terrific and it's, you know, he saw it as a way to right wrongs and that you couldn't just stand by while someone was, you know, in this case the Kaiser in World War I was taken over. And so he said, you know, but when his own son hit that hit him on a deeper level because he had such a great love for family, a deep love for his family and his children. And that was a terrific blow, and he died just a few months later.
Yes, Teddy was very similar to Rudyard Kipling, who was a big war advocate, and mm-hmm. his son was killed in World War I, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that really impacted Kipling. They had an identical experience. And I believe his son James died at D-Day.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, I was in Normandy just about the time of the 50th anniversary. And we went to that museum. There's a whole museum about him and about that part of the invasion. It's really amazing just how the threads follow out.
That's ironic. He lost two sons, one each in two world wars.
Hmm.
But Teddy, feisty as he was, do you mention in your portrayal that he was shot during a speech and
yes.
continued speaking?
We do have that's one of the scenes in the show. The script that kind of plays fast and loose with dates and times, and sometimes in the middle of a scene, 2 years will expire. We'll go through there, but there's a scene, and in this scene, I do get actually shot on stage, and I fall down and get up and stand up and make the rest of the speech. Yeah, he was a tough bird. He was I think he said in his autobiography about that he said, you know, many of these guys in the war, they get up and they fight continually. And that's a lot harder than just standing up and giving a speech. So, by Godfrey, I can do that.
Yeah. Well, isn't it fun to play such a colorful character?
Oh, it is.
And it's also illuminating for your audience because, you know, history is not our strongest suit here in America. We tend to overlook or not know a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I remember Jay Leno going out on the sidewalk and interviewing young college students who thought we fought the Germans in the Revolutionary War. But you see, you're illuminating history. You're
yes.
talking about and portraying someone who not only is a president very noteworthy in history, who's probably obscured by the passage of time,
mm-hmm.
but we're talking also about a man who was pivotal in our democracy and established some of the legacies that really are still here today. The National Park System is another example.
Right. Right, and the square deal, you know, the corporations were at that point beginning to grow and combine with each other and make these big conglomerates, and he was very big on antitrust issues of the day, because otherwise they would have mowed over the entire economy and could have taken the whole economy of the country down.
Well, I think maybe this is the time that we should suggest people
performances are.
Yeah, okay. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
Friday is your opening Friday. Friday night, are you
Friday
nervous?
Friday night.
That's opening night. Break a leg.
Thank you.
Friday night. This is at the Boone Community Theater. Friday night, April 21st, 7 p.m. Saturday, April 22nd, 7 p.m. Then on Sunday, a matinee, 2 o'clock p.m. That's the 23rd of April. Friday, the 28th of April, 7 p.m. again, and Saturday, next Saturday, the 29th, 7 p.m. So you're running two weekends as Teddy Roosevelt, John Hoffman, at the Boone Community Theater. Is there a website where they can check this out?
Yes. I mean, you can go to BooneCommunityTheater.org, or you go to Google and just type in Boone Community Theater. I'm a web developer by day, and so I make sure that we hit the top of the Google search engine.
Well, now, bully for you, John Hoffman, as you play
absolutely
Teddy Roosevelt this coming weekend and next weekend. Boone Community Theater, get on the website, check it out, and John Hoffman will be the bully pulpit guy.
Absolutely.
And this is KHOY Community Radio.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to John Hoffman telling us about Bully, the one-man show in which he portrays Teddy Roosevelt this weekend and next at Boone Community Theater.
It was my idea to end this Wednesday Fun Drive program by visiting some of the towns in our listening area to ask how they support us. I think the most valuable thing that they provide us is news and events that our listeners appreciate. But it's nice to hear their feedback and their memberships. It did occur to me, although I didn't quite squeeze it in because we had so much to talk about with John, that if just a fraction of the people who buy tickets to the shows that we let them know about, if they became members, we could probably reach that 25 pretty fast.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So I'd like to turn to another near neighbor, actually the one we've had our longest relationship, the Chamber of Commerce. Well, Greg.
And this is in Nevada.
This is in Nevada, and I just talked to Lynn Scarlett yesterday morning. We're talking with Lynn Scarlett, the director of the Nevada Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you, Susan. I'm so pleased to be on the radio with you this morning.
We've covered a lot of things in Nevada. Has this been helpful?
It has been. You've helped us promote a new event that we have here in Nevada. It's called Shop Nevada. And in fact, we're going to be holding our second annual Shop Nevada this Saturday, April 22nd from 10 to 3. You've also helped us promote our Lincoln Highway Days, and I know you have had a lot of impact on the Nevada Historical Society in helping them with many of the events that they hold each year.
Well, you know, this has just been our pleasure, because this is what our mission is, creating community through communication, and we're so happy to be able to feature the things that are happening in Nevada. There's so many neat things that you're doing. You've named just a few. We had some lovely things to do with the county fair and even new restaurants. I remember a couple years ago when you had two Mexican restaurants in Nevada. I guess you don't have two anymore.
Actually, we still do have two, yes. We have Mi Casita, and then we have another restaurant on the corner of Lincoln Highway and 6th Street here in Nevada.
Fritz and I ate at both of those, and we were really struck with how different they were. You know, the food's different, the atmosphere's different. That's pretty neat.
We like to have a variety here in Nevada, and of course, we're always looking for new business opportunities in our community. We would love to have a bakery in Nevada. I have a lot of people who would love to have a Chinese restaurant again in Nevada. We do have a couple of open storefronts. So if you're thinking about starting a business. I'd love to visit with you about that.
Maybe some of our listeners have been just wondering where they could have a bakery.
Susan, I have to look for every opportunity to get business in Nevada.
Well, of course, being the county seat means that we have other reasons to come and do programming in Nevada besides the Chamber of Commerce. How does that affect you in the Chamber of Commerce?
Having the county seat here?
Yes.
It brings a number of people to the community when they have to do their car registrations, or if they are paying their property taxes for their home, or if they're looking to get a birth certificate or a passport, they have to come to Nevada. So we're working very hard to put a positive spin on their experience here in Nevada. We love having new people to the area stopping in and visiting our community, and whatever we can do to share, to give them some direction, we're happy to do.
Well, I know that that is, that's also what we would like to do here at KHOI. We're so proud of the communities in our listening area. And I was talking earlier how struck I was with the diversity of towns and what their features are and what the people love about them. Now we have a call in to Deb Brown, who we have worked with in Webster City. In a conversation with her last week, she told me why she thought it was beneficial for her clients in Webster City. She's now doing, she has a PR firm to support us, and how they might do it. Deb, are you with us?
I am. Good morning. How are you?
Great, and so glad to hear you. Now, could you explain a little bit more about why you felt that it was important to support KHOI from Webster City?
Well, KHOI supports Webster City, and you guys do a marvelous job of talking about the things that are going on in our community, and I value those connections. I think we need, as small towns and small businesses, we do need to support each other. And I can't begin to thank you enough for the work that you've done for many of the businesses and locations and events happening here in Webster City.
Wow. I appreciate that. And is there something concrete coming up that you can talk about yet?
Yeah, there's a few things. Legacy Learning Boone River Valley has several classes throughout the year. It's what they do. They offer courses and workshops related to art and nature. And they just started this program that will go every Thursday night called Meet the Artist, every Thursday night through May from 4 to 6. You'll be able to come over and meet some of the artists that are teaching the courses and maybe even participate in a little art yourself. There is no charge to this. They have a artist in residence in the community. And by the way, I think there's only 3 in the state, actually, including us. And we're pretty excited about that. So it's a chance to come over and meet the artists in residence, but also to meet the teachers and artists that are providing the workshops for our community. So I encourage you to come look. Can I give our website out?
Sure, and we'll put it on ours.
That would be perfect. It's legacylearningbrv.org, and that's BRV as in Boone River Valley.
Incidentally, I'd like to talk about how Webster City supports us. We have often had an underwriting relationship with Legacy Learning, and I believe that you will be working with us to promote KHOI through some other way.
Absolutely. We actually, Legacy Learning received a grant from the Hotel Motel people here in our community. And one of the things that we requested was to be able to share and do underwriting for KHOI. And to continue to utilize your services as well. So one of the Hotel Motel grant makes it possible for organizations like Legacy Learning to do things to promote the arts throughout the community and throughout the state. So you're an important cog in that wheel.
And we wanted our listeners to know this to inspire others, other communities who might also recognize those benefits. And so thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye, Dan.
Well, we can't leave this discussion of small towns without mentioning my hometown, Story City. The town isn't quite large enough to be a sponsor, but we have a lot of individual members there, and one who we'd speak to today if he was here is our old friend Mayor Mike Jensen.
Yes, I remember he was one of the first people we interviewed, and I remember his becoming a member on the air at one of our previous fund drives. And so if he were here today, he could renew his membership, right?
Yes, he could. Yes, it's a good time to do that.
At an elevated level is what I recall. Okay, so why isn't he here today? He's busy over there, right?
Well, Mike has to go to two funerals today, and he helps out with funerals, so it's a civic responsibility again who takes him away today. But Mike let me know that there's a lot going on in Story City. We've just got our pool near completion. The deadline is Memorial Day. And, you know, these construction sites, it never looks like it's going to make it. But they're right on track, and so we should be open on the date of May 30th or so. Then we've done a lot of renewal and reworking of our South Park. We have some WPA projects there from the 30s. The swinging bridge, which we're famous for, and they've also expanded the South Park in many ways to be more amenable to folks just wanting to stop by, have picnics or gatherings, and there are some overlooks over the rapids we have there. We have a little waterfall going for us. And this time of the year, it's Trees Forever. That's another thing that Story City's famous for. We have a very good chapter, and that's one of Mike Jensen's pet projects, so we'll be planting a lot of trees. And there is a big tree sale, too, for folks who want to buy trees at a reduced price that they get for the Trees Forever, and that's another fundraiser for them. So big spring in Story City, a lot of improvements made during this year will benefit from them greatly this summer.
Yes. Well,
I've got a question for you. That tree sale, you don't have to be a Story City resident to buy a tree from Story City, do you?
I don't think so. They'd probably welcome anybody who wants to buy a tree.
I'm sure they do. How many trees? He told me he was going to be unloading hundreds of trees, or was it thousands?
Well, it's hundreds because they sell the trees, and then every year they plant a lot of trees in the parking, you know,
yes,
on the streets,
yes,
where it's city property. So what they're doing is a long-term plan to shade all the streets in Story City and beautiful trees, steering clear of species that are in trouble. And so Michael, over the time, well, I forget, thousands of trees have been planted since he's been involved with Trees Forever. And every street in Story City looks like a scene from Father's Knows Best, you know, tree line, avenue. It's just beautiful in Story City, and we're known for our cathedral-like trees that stretch over the streets.
Well, and here at KHOI, as part of our fund drive, where I'd like to stress the one great advantage besides calling in 515-292-2878 or texting at 515-200-7758 or donating online. You can bring your check right in to the Pantorium. And what's really great is if you come in tonight for our last Pantorium session and just drop it in and listen to the concert. Greta, are you?
That's right. Tonight is an exciting night. It is the last of our series of six Pantorium sessions that we have scheduled during the fund drive to raise awareness about the work that we do promoting and amplifying local talent here in central Iowa. And so tonight's show is really, we're all very excited about it on the Live Music Task Force. It's going to be more experimental than most musical shows that we've put on. The performer group, it's actually just a one-man group called Mountain Eats Mountain. And what he does is he does a technique called looping, which is laying down a track of one instrument that repeats itself, and then layering on top of that another track and another track of different instruments, so that it becomes a very rich, rich mix of different instruments and all repeating sort of phrases. And to some extent, it is improvisational. So it's a very exciting technique that takes, you know, the studio out into a performance venue. And the performer, Adam Lyons, is a musician, part of the group Dr. Murdoch, which is one of the, you know, possibly the most popular and accomplished rock bands in Ames, original music. So it's going to be an exciting show from 7 to 8 tonight. I encourage everyone to tune in if you can't come down, but certainly it'll be a good audience tonight and a great time to come down and show your support for KHOI and a local artist.
Yes, but as you described his technique, I was wondering, what does that look like? If you can hear it if you tune in on the radio, but what's going on?
Well,
all these instruments that are being played.
We'll have speakers, and you know, he has a recording device, and I'm sure he has foot pedals that he turns them on and off with, and gets various channels going. We had something like this with his bandmate Jose Mendez, maybe Jose, also from Dr. Murdoch. He has a hip hop act where he's programmed a lot of different sound phrases and plays with them sort of in the moment while his cohort is delivering hip-hop lyrics. So it's the type of thing that you couldn't have seen certainly 20 years ago or possibly even 10 years ago, but technology has advanced, and so this is a new genre of music.
Wow.
And that's tonight?
Tonight at
7 o'clock at the Pantorium. We're down here right across from the Octagon on Douglas, and if you're over 55, don't bring your cleaning. It's the old Pantorium. And I really think this is going to be exciting. It's mountain eats mountain, and it's not a geological disaster. It's a musician. And so what we're talking about here is an opportunity to hear cutting-edge sound and performance here at the Pantorium. KHOI, 410 Douglas, downtown Ames. The last of our series, right, Greta?
The last of the series for this month. We grouped them all together for the Spring Fun Drive to really get excitement going.
Well, it's going to be fun tonight at the Pantorium here at KHOI, 410 Douglas, 7 o'clock tonight. And mountain eats mountain.
And bring your checks.
Yes.
The concert is open to all, but if you feel a generous generous tug, why? This is a great time to come by. If you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our central Iowa listening area, we've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson. Voices you heard were Art Cullen, John Hoffman, Lynn Scarlett, and Deb Brown, and of course, our special guest reporter, Greta Anderson.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon, but tonight at 7 p.m., you can come down to the Pantorium to hear Mountain Eats Mountain, and you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org, and you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our shows, postings on your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
And Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join us and join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember your participation as listener
and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible, especially right now during our fun drive.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
Support for KHOI comes from ISU Theater, presenting The Tempest, Shakespeare's fantastical tale of deception, revenge, and redemption, April 20th through 23rd at Fisher Theater in Ames. Tickets and more information at theater.iastate.edu.